This episode is brought to you by CEP Compression Australia. CEP Compression brings the user more energy, greater endurance, and enhanced performance during activities. For a discount at CEP, use the following code online, local legends in running. Welcome to the Local Legends in Running podcast, where you hear the stories from local legends in the Australian running community you've simply always wanted to hear. Today, season 4, episode 81, I sit down and chat with Adelaide man Isaac Hayne. Isaac is fresh off the Launceston half marathon, running 61.13 last weekend as the third fastest half marathon of all time on Australian soil. Isaac's 25, and just the way he spoke was so mature, so articulated, and most of all, just so open about his training and struggles as well. That's the main thing. His injuries, mental health around his running, and starting to really learn in the last couple of years how to balance all of his training around those things, including his nutrition. So I just think all these factors have led to that result last weekend at Launceston, but also, like, we're talking about the Sea to Surf 2024 winner here. This guy is right up there now in the ranks of Australian running. So very exciting young man to watch moving forward, particularly in that half marathon and 10K events. That's what he's targeting this year. You'll see him at the Gold Coast half marathon. Only a 5-week gap there between Launceston, so hopefully he can get his body right for that. And he was talking at the end of the conversation about potentially doing a 10K. Maybe Zatopek, although Zatopek isn't always the most, the quickest 10K of the year, but getting somewhere to run a really fast 10K. So looking forward to that. He's run a 28.15 just the other month in Tokyo, which is right up there for all-time Australian as well. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Isaac. I haven't spoken to any runners from Adelaide on this podcast in 3 years, so it's great to hear him talk about running in that city and spread his wisdom and, again, openness about his training. Thanks so much for listening, as always, guys. Cheers. Welcome officially to the Local Legends in Running podcast. I've got a young man here, a half marathoner, the 11th fastest now of all time. That's Isaac Hayne. Welcome to the podcast.
Cheers. No, thank you for having me.
No problems, mate. Firstly, congratulations on that run last weekend. I was watching some footage of this. Is the Launceston Running Festival, half marathon last weekend. It looks like such an amazing event. It's been labelled now. There's such a great depth of elite runners there. And you were there, second place, third fastest all time on Australian soil now, state best as well, and a 61.13 PB. So you must be happy, Isaac.
Yeah, no, I was. I think it's funny coming second because you always want that little bit more. I was second by not much either. So there is that little bit that just sort of stings, and, you know, more often than not, I sort of do these sort of podcasts after having won a race rather than coming second. So it feels a little bit funny. But in terms of, like, yeah, the way that I executed the race, it was pretty good. And Launceston, like you said, it is a great event. I've been down there a few times now. So it's a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get to talking about it in a bit more depth. By way of agenda, Isaac, we'll, as I said, just touch on that half marathon last weekend and then wind the clock back to the very start and how it's all led to you here today and that run last week and moving forward 25 this year. So there's so much ahead. So we want to look at the training too, how the training's boding. You're an Adelaide man there week to week and what's coming up this year on the agenda. But let's get back to this Launceston half. As I spoke about, it's just been labelled what's called a World Athletics Elite label for those listeners who don't know what that means. And basically, I had to do a bit of research here, Isaac, to find the criteria. And we're looking at things like that these races must have an elite athlete field. The course standards must be up to scratch and measured, that is, properly, and all those kinds of things. The timing systems obviously need that to be pinpoint. Anti-doping measures in place to ensure that we've got the right athletes there and prize money. So, like, I just sort of we had the Brisbane Marathon up here on the weekend just gone, and we compare prize money, for example. They're throwing a lot of money around for this event, which is great to see. But it sort of meets those five standards now, and it's going to continue because that was the first time this year they've labelled it in that sort of realm, and it's going to continue to get faster and faster and bigger, isn't it?
Richard Welsh, the event organizer, does a really, really good job. So, I did the Launceston 10K back in 2021, I think. That was the first time I headed down there. And it just seems like each time I head down, he's saying that there's bigger participation numbers. And that was, even through COVID. And he's getting more and more people to back it and support it, and there's more advertising, more athletes coming down, more prize money being offered up, and it's kind of reflected in what you see on the live stream. So, having watched a little bit of the race back, one of the biggest things was I was gobsmacked at how many people were on the start line. I did the Launceston 10K last year as well, and it was a pretty quiet feel on the start line, whereas this year for the half marathon, it was like, wow, there's a lot of people here. It sort of gives a bit more of that mass participation event sort of vibe.
Yeah, it's always sort of, I guess the main premise runners are going there for is for the 10K historically. And with that change this year, it saw that half marathon grow a bit from, like you're alluding to, like that recreational runner point of view behind you guys, but also that elite field. So, how do you find the race? Like watching the footage, it just looks like you've got these long, flat roads to run across and such an elite, like we spoke about, that core standard being part of the World Athletics Elite label, right up to scratch, eh?
The course itself, like I really didn't know where we were going. So I'm glad that we had a pacemaker and a car and everything like that. So that was helpful. The first 6K was actually a little bit more undulating than I realized. That some people had sort of mentioned that, but there were just like a few gentle climbs that took the rhythm out. But the pacemaker did a pretty good job. We were a little bit quick in some sections and a little bit slow in others. But pretty much through to 7K when he dropped off, we were bang on. And then, from there, it was like a really steady, gentle climb. I didn't even realize we were going uphill until we reached a turnaround point. And I'm like, oh, now we're running downhill. So the last 7K was as good as you could have it. It was like downhill or flat, barely any turns. It was just like the last turn with about 500 meters to go. That was the worst part.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the race itself because I watched the YouTube footage, as I mentioned, last night, and the pack just seemed to be amazing. But it did, as naturally it often does, just thin out towards the end. But we're talking about guys in that pack of the level of Andy Buchanan, Liam Bowden was in there, and some amazing international runners. And what you didn't mention before, Isaac, was that was an international runner who beat you, wasn't it, for first place as well. So you were the first Aussie through, and you've beat none other than Brett Robinson to obtain second place. So it's an amazing run, and he's the other one I just didn't mention right now in that field.
Like it was a good field. I think what was promising sort of through that middle stage of the race was that people were dropping off and I hadn't like had to put any pressure on. So like I hadn't had to show my face at the front and people were just gradually falling off. Brett had made a few moves and Sam Clifford, the
Yes,
local
Sam Clifford, yeah.
Tasmania, had made a few moves. But I think one thing that I reflected on that I did really well was I was able to zone out and distance myself from the race, so to speak. But I also really concentrated on what everybody else was doing. So, for example, I was just keeping tabs on, the back of Sam's neck and his shoulders, and I was listening to Brett's footsteps and looking at Andy's arm carriage, and just keeping tabs on, oh, how are they all feeling? Has something changed? And then when things started to deteriorate for each of them in their own different way, that's when I was like, okay, cool. Like, now might be the time to make a bit of a move.
Yeah, and any idea with Sam Clifford and Andy Buchanan, did anything sort of arise for them out of the blue, or do you think that is that where their fitness is at in the half? Of course, Andy is now the Australian marathon record holder, but any idea with those guys?
Yeah, Andy was coming off London marathon, so he sort of said he had had 3 weeks off, which is kind of what you need to do after a marathon. So yeah, he's probably still trying to freshen up. And again, if you're running 62 low for a half after a marathon, that's a
It's
pretty
amazing.
solid effort. Yeah,
Amazing.
yeah. And Sam's probably just as inexperienced at the half as I am. So, he ran an incredible 10K over in Tokyo. We were in the same race there. But I just get the vibe, and again, I don't know this from Sam at all, so I'm sort of just speculating here, but he does a lot of his interval sessions like at a cracking pace. Some of his Strava uploads, he's rolling, K reps and 3K reps at like 240 pace per K. Whereas a lot of my training, I'm just trying to get really efficient between, high 240s and low 250s. So it's probably a little bit more half marathon specific. But also, like, we also just have bad days on race day sometimes, and when things don't quite go to plan, so that could have been the case too.
Yeah, that's it. And it's amazing now, like to have a race like Launceston too, the half marathon, I guess, is becoming a more prominent, well-renowned event that we can actually kind of target. For years, it's felt like, and this I'm talking probably years ago, though, it's sort of in between that 10K and marathon distance now. And to have a race here in Australia, which I think, if I got this correct, it's the first or only in the Southern Hemisphere as well with that World Athletics Elite label. So isn't that cool?
Yeah, no, it's not bad. Again, I think the less that we have to travel from Australia for these big races, the better. It means we can perform well. So we're starting to get that on the track with, say, like Moree Plant, and that being a gold label event. But then to get that on the roads as well, is nice to have that inclusion there too.
Yeah, so let's wind the clock back, Isaac, as I mentioned earlier, about just to get to know you. And we do have a lot of Brisbane listeners with this being a Brisbane-based podcast, but as they often are, they're all over the country and the world. But just to set the scene, like last year, you were Sea to Surf winner, weren't you? 2024, that's correct.
Yep, that's right.
Bit of context, second place at GC Half, and I think that was to Andy Buchanan as well, wasn't it, last year? And you have won that GC 10K before. I've got 2022 here.
Yep,
And
that's correct.
the Burnie, that's also in Tasmania, the Burnie 10K as well, the year prior. Those all right?
Yeah, that seems about right. Yeah, I think yeah, Bernie was 2021. So yeah, I think you're spot on there. You're listening a lot better than I know.
That's the last 5 years. Let's go right back to the start quickly, even sort of primary school age, and just talk about how you got into running and how it's led to results as amazing as those, Isaac.
All right, if we're going to go back to primary school. gee whiz. There's probably a little bit of mayo on this story, but I was a pretty chubby little kid growing up, and I wasn't great at sports. So probably, like, we're talking like, 8, 9 years old, and then I was pretty fed up, and I just wanted to ri win a ribbon at sports day. So every recess and lunchtime, just started running laps of the school oval with some mates. And then ended up, doing the 400 meters at sports day, tripped over at the start, and I remember hearing my dad laugh at me. And I thought, I'll show him. So I got up and won that. And then, so maybe that was the first sign that, maybe I can run. But then, yeah, like I sort of played lots of different sports. Probably when I was about 12, I made my first state cross country team, and I was like, wow, like I really love running. Like, this is something that I'm okay and I enjoy, and it was good fun, but I wasn't very good. Like, I wasn't making state teams, but I quit every other sport just because I really wanted to do running. So that was good fun. And then probably the turning point for me where it started to get a little bit more serious and my performance went to another level was when I was 15. My mum was diagnosed with a terminal cancer, and so she passed when I
Oh,
was 50.
wow.
She
Sorry to hear
passed.
that.
No, that's okay. You didn't do it. And again, that was 10 years ago. And again, it probably gets a little bit heavier than what most running podcasts get, but that was a big moment for 15-year-old Isaac. And I thought, well, I've better keep, better do something to keep myself busy. So I was running a fair bit. And then, yeah, from there, I think probably it tilted a little bit into obsession. There's when you're 15, you think you've got it all figured out. And I was massively overtraining as a way of coping, I suppose. But when you're in your teen years and you overtrain, you just get better than everybody else. So I'd go through these swings of, running really well at nationals, but then winding up really injured and just fluctuating between those two poles of boom or bust, essentially.
Yeah. So in hindsight, with the overtraining, sorry, Isaac,
No, that's fine.
how do you define that now, looking back at that? Was it the mileage weekly you're talking about here?
No, probably more so the intensity I was training at. So, I was coming f like the group that I was running with was it was a group of mostly juniors, but we were doing, three sessions a week and that VO2 max style of training where everything's flat out. You're aiming to win the last rep. It's short reps, it's 200s, it's 400s. It's just, and you've got, we had a group of maybe like 10 guys my age or a bit younger, just sending it on these laps around the track. And it was fantastic fun, but not sustainable. And then, yeah, there was the other element of, later in high school, with the benefit of hindsight, I definitely developed a bit of an eating disorder. So I got thinner and thinner, which is great for your VO2 max, but not great for your bone density. And so, yeah, I think when I was 17, I won the under 18 national 3K. And yeah, what had got me there was insane overtraining and absolute obsession, and under fueling and overtraining, and so that was a blessing in disguise, or sorry, a blessing and a curse in that it kept me running because I'd won a national title. I thought I have to keep going with this, but it sort of told me that I was on the right track when, in all honesty, I was moving further and further away from sustainable training habits.
Yes.
So it was an interesting phase.
Let's dive into that. Like, what signs led to you to believe that that was overtraining, injuries, illness, what kind of stuff there?
I definitely, yeah. So I broke down with like tibial stress fractures in that period of time. And probably as well, I realized that I wasn't coping. I was like me mentally as in year 12, I was holding on by thread, essentially. Like year 12 is hard enough, let alone I was my family had moved into state, so I was living with my grandparents, and that was a big change. And then I was trying to, train and rock up to these national events and trying to win. And then, yeah, my body just gave up on me. So I like that chronic fatigue sort of state. I was burnt out. I got tibial stressies, and even then I thought, okay, well, I'm going to recover from this injury and get back into training. And it probably took me a good 12 to 18 months to finally start realizing, like, oh, something has to change.
Yeah, was that a self-realization, or was someone talking to you, or had recognized that themselves and telling you about it?
Definitely not a self-realization. I'm pretty stubborn, and again, I thought I knew it all because I was almost 20. Probably I wrote about this recently, but I probably have to credit Michael Nitschke, who's a sports podiatrist down here in Adelaide. He's on the Shoe Geeks podcast, and he's quite the physiologist or physiology nerd. And I remember him sending me a 2-hour video that was describing the concepts of polarized training, which was completely foreign to me. So it was just like, it wasn't that I thought I knew better at that point. It was that I just had no idea. So I watched this video and then I was like, oh, wow, okay, like I'm not doing that at all. And then even from there, it probably took another 12 months of more injuries and worse performances and more burning out when I was like, okay, like I've really got to change something here.
Yeah, so you're Adelaide based, born there, primary school, high school. Then where and who were you training with post school there for those few years? You're 25 now. What was filling time between, say, 18 to 20?
My first coach, his name's Peter Dean, and he was, a high school athletics coach, and then I jumped in and he coached me up until I was about 19 or 20, and then I made the move to Team Tempo with Adam Diddick. And so my last 12 months training with Peter, I'd finally sort of wrapped my head around polarized training. So even though I was doing these super high intensity training sessions, my other days weren't as intense anymore. So I was sort of backing off and trying to keep things a bit more sustainable there. And so then I sort of went from, okay, I'm not getting injured anymore, but I need to improve my performance. And so that's where, the training model that Adam Diddick out at Team Tempo sort of made things a bit more appealing in that sense. So I made the move there when I was 20. And then sort of been there ever since.
Yeah, so a year later it was the Bernie 10K win 2021. So what sort of training led to that result and for you to start to realize that you can compete at the highest level?
Yeah, good question. I think probably like my easy days hadn't changed too much. So my weekly volume was still pretty similar. It sort of sat around that 120, 130K mark for the first track season that I was with Adam. And then the only difference was that the training sessions were different. So rather than doing, all out 400 meter reps, we were doing sub-maximal fartleks and sub-maximal, 1K reps. So I really found the continuous stuff was hard. So I'd be lining up with like Matt Clark or Max Stevens and being with them for the first half of a fartlek and then eating shit for the second half, and realizing like, oh wow, I'm not as fit as I think I am. So yeah, in that patch, I think in June of 2021, I won the Launceston 10, and it wasn't the strongest field because that was COVID and like it had sort of been obliterated. The Victorians weren't down, so it probably wasn't the strongest win, but it was something confirming for me going, oh wow, like I can do all right at this. And then followed that up with the Bernie 10 win a few months later. And so I was like, oh wow, like this longer stuff on the roads,
Yeah.
I'm good at and I enjoy it a little bit. So yeah, that was probably the main changes I made to get there.
Yeah, as the year later it was also the Gold Coast 10K win as well, another prominent Australian event. Like, had the training remained the same? What sort of mileage were you hitting and training leading then into 22?
Oh gosh, that was another tricky period. I'd come back from the States and a track season there. Probably from like the last year leading into that Gold Coast event, or the last 6 months, definitely I'd up my mileage. So rather than doing, 120, 130, it was more around 140, 150, occasionally creeping into 160. But then, probably I'd done a track season over in the States. So I'd run a 5K PB and the rest of the trip hadn't quite gone to plan. And then there was a few personal things that I was managing. So then I rocked up on the start line at Gold Coast with no expectations. And then again, just had the time of my life. I think I remember pretty early on being like, okay, I think I've got this one. So as I went past my teammates who were still, running the course, I was, cheering for them mid-race, and that was a really good time. So I think if I can go back through that whole period from, Launceston to Burnie to Gold Coast as well, it wasn't smooth sailing. Like I was in hospital the weekend before Launceston. Again, I was trying to study, full-time physio and trying to train and live out of home. And I burnt out and just had to have a little stint in the hospital over the weekend. And then, before Burnie, I'd been sitting in an altitude tent for 3 weeks and I was feeling pretty lonely and miserable. And then, like I sort of said, like the home life wasn't exactly ideal leading into Gold Coast either. But I think something that I learned from that was still being able to execute on race day, despite all the external noise that floats around, yeah, which is a skill that's probably kept me in good stead for the last few years.
Yeah, and in 2023 was that second to Andy Buchanan as well at Gold Coast. So had the training become longer in terms of mileage, and were you starting to work out and mature to work out what was the right balance between, we spoke about nutrition, but the mental health and then the running as well?
Well, I think so. Like you, with the results that you've listed, it's like I ran pretty well in 2021 and 2022, and then there's some results in 2024 and then this year. But 2023, there's not a lot on the. I think if you look at my results from that year, they're either terrible or non-existent. So I graduated as a physiotherapist at the end of 2022, and found, got a job part-time 2023, so I could still run. And I love my physiotherapy job, but the clinic that I was at and the boss that I worked for was not the right setup for me. So it was a stage of like I'd got injured, and similar to what we talked about before, I got injured, I overdid it, I was burning the candle from a few different ends, got tired, and then recovered from my injury and tried to go again, and it just wasn't working. I was in this cycle of injury, and I was pretty ready to give it up. So
Wow.
I remember straining my calf at the start of last year and just being like, you know what? Like, nothing is going right. I'm pretty ready to throw in the towel. And I spoke to Adam, my coach, and just said, look, like, I think if I get injured one more time, like, I'm just gonna leave it. I've sort of, kept fronting up and nothing's gone my way. And then he was like, okay, like, just, don't put any pressure on it. We'll just get you back jogging. You can do one session a week if you feel like it. And from there, almost like hitting rock bottom meant that like anything was a bonus all of a sudden. So rather than trying to live up to this pressure of, oh, I'm a fantastic 10K runner, or I'm a 13:35K guy, it was like, oh man, I've pretty much quit. Like, anything's a bonus. And then, yeah, in April of 2024, I ran a PB over in Paris running for, an ASICS speed race. And I thought, you beauty, like, running's all good again. And it was just that bit of confidence in my performance and my body that sort of got things going a little bit more.
Yeah, and you had to see the surf win too, 2024. Like that is a, well, it used to be like the race in Australia that everyone knew about, was on TV, and you were there last year as the winner of that event. So another I guess medal in the cabinet.
Like, again, I had some good performances last year. I'm not gonna downplay it, but I think probably through that whole period, it was coming, not easy is not the right word, but I was just replicating my training. Like, training had been going really smoothly, and it was more just the confidence and the enjoyment of running that really helped with that. But I think throughout that period as well, I was sort of seeing what everybody else was doing on the track, and I was like, oh man, like, I'm really keen to do that. I still wanted to run some PBs on the track, so.
Yeah, well, let's get into the training now, because what I want to sort of hear about is what led you to that result at Launceston last weekend, Isaac, because a lot of recreational runners out there tend to really gravitate towards, which is fair enough, training towards the marathon. And by training towards the marathon, they kind of cover the lesser events in terms of the half and five and stuff like that. Like, what's your training look like prior to the lead up of this event, the half at Lonnie?
To be honest, I've definitely had better training blocks. So like I sort of said, like, things don't always go to plan, and I'd certainly learnt a little bit from that. So last year, when we sort of were talking about, Gold Coast and Cities of Surf and things like that, like, training was incredible. Like, I knew I was fit. I knew that I was not going to have any issues on the start line, and just, if someone was better than me, like, so be it. They had to be really, really good. Whereas this year, I had the unfortunate incident of breaking a rib a couple of months back. So it was 2 weeks before that Tokyo speed race 10K, and again, training had been going incredibly well, but I don't know if anyone's broken a rib before, but
I have.
It's miserable. It's like, it hurts to move around in bed. It's difficult to breathe on the run. It's not great. So essentially, I was just like, well, I'm not going to make it any. I got the clearance that I wasn't going to make it any worse while running, and it was just going to be bloody sore. So I was like, well, I've just better keep training through it. So we backed off the intensity a little bit. But I think this year my average mileage has probably been around 140, 150 k's a week. And then I think about 2 weeks before Launceston Half, I had 180 k week, which was, to be honest, I wasn't aiming for that. It was a bit of a misjudgment. So then the next week I backed it off. Yeah, probably it's like doubling most days. A longer run on a day is usually about 60 or 70 minutes. And then like my long run is roughly around 2 hours, sometimes a bit more, sometimes a bit less, but it's mostly just getting that mileage in. Yeah.
Yeah, in terms of the threshold work, like trying to work towards that half marathon pace, how do you sort of squeeze that into the week? Is it in those long runs at all, or is it just in a one-off session, like on a Thursday or Friday or something like that?
Yeah, so our group setup is that our training sessions are on a Tuesday and a Friday. So yeah, I like to go, Tuesday morning and Friday morning. And I don't think there's anything like special or like, there's no secret sessions that are going to make or break you. I think it's probably just getting in the work with having that background of mileage. So it's like if your mileage is too much that you can't get a quality session in, that's not going to work. And if your sessions are so intense that you can't get the mileage in, that's not going to work. So I think like an example of a couple of sessions that I've done. I had 5 by 6 minutes, probably in that 180k week. So with a 2 minute recovery, and so in those 6 minutes, I was sort of splitting a 2k, like my 2k split was maybe in like the 5:40s or something like that. So just sort of sitting around that 251, 252 sort of, k pace.
This is
So
Friday.
yeah, that would be on a
The
Friday,
threshold
like.
stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so and so that's where it's like you're running at threshold, then you have your couple of minutes down, and then you go again. Whereas then we also do a lot of continuous stuff. So that might be on a Tuesday. We're sort of doing, 1K on with a 600 float and just repeating that, six, seven, eight times, or 800 on, 800 float. And so you're just trying to keep, I like to picture it of like the image of a sound wave where you're kind of floating up above your threshold and then dropping back down below and float and just going through that for a run. So but like I sort of said, so last year I was doing those continuous runs for maybe 14, 15, 16k and averaging 257 pace, and like, wow, that's going all right. Whereas this year, with the different things going on and feeling a bit tired or having a fractured rib, those sort of sessions I've been doing shorter and only averaging maybe 3 minute 302, so just like backing off a touch. So it's interesting. I don't know why training less intensely has a better performance, but I think it's just building weeks on weeks and layers on layers of fitness. I think that's probably what helps me the most.
Yeah, I like that. And what about Tuesdays? Like getting any really quick stuff in at all with long rests, like 200s, 400s kind of territory?
Nah, not for the moment. So I think there's probably an element of like my body doesn't quite hold up to that. So I was doing a lot more of that sort of work in the track season. So yeah, like I don't think my track season results were spectacular, but I managed to run a 5K PB, which was something that I'd really, really wanted to do. But even then, it's mostly like start the session with like a threshold, so whether that's 3 or 4K of like just continuous aerobic work, and then dropping down to some like 600s, 400s, maybe some 200s. But I could count on one hand how many sessions I've done 200s in over the last year. Yeah.
Now you spoke about nutrition before and potentially earlier in life, like not eating enough or getting the right stuff in. How's that changed like in the last year or so? How are you sort of eating around that kind of mileage around 150 to sustain the training?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I've sort of realized that it's one of those things of when you're down and out, like you're really down and out, and you really have to like climb yourself out of a hole. It's hard work. Whereas when you've actually got some consistency behind you, like if things don't quite go to plan, then it's okay. So in that 2023 period I was talking about, like I put on 7 kilos in a matter of months, which was like, that's a fair bit. That's about, that was about 10% of my body weight.
Wow.
So generally I sort of sit at around 62, 63, and just from hitting the gym 2 or 3 times a week, cross training a bit more and eating heaps, I ended up at about 70 kilos. So when I ran City to Bay that year, which is like our Adelaide fun run, I didn't fit my race singlet properly because my chest and shoulders were much bigger. And I was so embarrassed, but I still had a decent run that day. But like what I'd been doing then was I was eating like 16 Weet-Bix for breakfast. Like making sure I had a smoothie with like a Morton drink mix sachet in it, which is just like extra carbs, like having two dinners. And look, as you and whoever's listening to this will probably gather, like I'm probably all or nothing, right? I'm all in and I'm massively bought in, or I don't do it at all. And so that sort of led to me being, 70 kilos roughly. But then because I'd worked so hard to get my body out of that energy deficient state, just as I'd upped my mileage, and I was running more, and I like running re suppresses your appetite a little bit. So then I wasn't eating quite as much, and I just gradually lost 1 kilo a month over the course of 2024. Not deliberately, I wasn't aiming to lose weight, but that's just the way that it happened. And now I sit, pretty comfortably at like my race weight. So yeah, at the moment, like, it's just sort of, it's nothing special, it's making sure that I have carbs with each meal. I'm having a gel on my longer runs, and a longer run's anything over an hour. So, and making sure that I have two or three if I need it. Actually, I've just finished off. This is my go-to if I'm ever sore and a bit worried. I've just finished off a 2 liter chocolate milk. That's a really nice way to make sure that my bones are healthy and I'm getting enough carbohydrates in. But yeah, that's essentially it. Like occasionally with work, like my lunch is pushed back a couple of hours, in which case it's like, look, like I'm just gonna have to cop that. But yeah, at the moment, I think I'm probably in that nice state where if my eating doesn't quite go to plan, it's not gonna blow up in my face, but I'm also in that spot where I can consistently get enough in. Yeah.
Excellent. Hey, can we go back just a month ago? You touched on the Tokyo 10K, that road race you did, and that was your PB, wasn't it, of 28:15? Is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
So I'm looking at that you in the ninth position all time Australian with that run, but that's a newish event, isn't it? Can you just talk to us about how your experience was there, Isaac?
Oh, it was fantastic. Yeah. Like, ASICS do a really, really good job of putting on those sort of events. So, like I said, they did Paris last year and Tokyo this year, and it's they think we're doing them a favor by coming across and supporting their event. But like, it's so much fun. Like, so for people that hadn't followed it, it was a 10K road race around a 1.3K flat concrete loop. So we did 7 laps. So they had a lap counter with a bell for the final lap. They had wave lights for pacing, not for every group, but for most groups, and then a pacemaker for different paces. And so that's where Sam Clifford ran the 10K national record. And like I sort of said, I'd broken a rib 2 weeks before that, and it was the hardest race that I have ever done. Like I was ready to step off at 2K in, and I really had to hustle my way through that entire race. Look, it's my fault for ending up injured like that. So it's always coulda, woulda, shoulda, but training had suggested I could have gone a bit quicker than that. But to finish, let alone run a PB, like I was absolutely stoked with. Yeah.
That's so good, mate. Yeah, it looked fantastic. Is there footage on YouTube that listeners can find to view that race?
I'm actually not sure. I think it was on the World Athletics, like it was live streamed on the World Athletics website. I'm not sure if they'd have a replay of that event. But yeah, it's pretty cool. So they had wave lights for people wanting to run 27 and 27:30 for a 10K, which is just incredibly quick. I can't even fathom that. And then yeah, it was essentially just ASICS athletes from around the world running in the new Metaspeed shoes and trying to break PBs. So
Oh,
yeah.
awesome. Can we actually touch on that too? I noticed a number of athletes in the race last weekend in the Metaspeeds. They have taken off the Paris version, particularly. I think they've brought out a new one there as well. But how are you finding those as footwear for the faster races.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So I've been lucky enough that I've got to try some of the prototypes before they're released out and developed. I remember when I first put the Paris Metaspeed on my foot, and it just felt like the best shoe I'd ever worn. The best way I could describe it is when you drive like a really nice car and you put your foot on the accelerator and it just goes. Like that's what the shoe feels like. Like when I want to go to another gear, it just responds for me, which is really, really nice. And then like I'm obviously biased in that, like I have to represent ASICS, but this new model, the Tokyo one, I reckon it's even better. I reckon it's the best, again, like a better version again. So I wear the Metaspeed Edge, which I just like the plate position a little bit more. But yeah, no, it's absolutely fantastic. Footwear has come a long way since I started running.
It's crazy. It really is. It really is. That's interesting. Yeah, there's so many out there, and it's just great to see footwear other than just Nike representing the elite athletes. So let's move into the year ahead now. So we've got major events coming up over this way too, the Gold Coast Marathon. We've got Sunny Coast Marathon coming up in Queensland, Melbourne and Sydney, of course, on the roads. But what have you got locked in?
I've entered the Gold Coast half, so I'm pretty keen to get up there for that. I've got some pretty grumpy joints and tendons after
Gotta say,
long
it's what,
session.
5 weeks difference, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a tighter turnaround than I'm used to, but I think I should be okay for it. So I've just really made sure to take, a few days easier this week and just try and dial things back. And when I say that, like, I suppose as runners, we're always putting on a bit of a front. Like I was actually really quite stressed about how my foot was feeling on Wednesday and Thursday, and I was like, oh no, like that's my year done. That's my last few years of training all in the bin. And so my girlfriend's had to put up with me feeling a bit down in the dumps about that. But thank God I have a good physio that's telling me to calm down and get on with things. So yeah, hopefully I get up for Gold Coast. I think that should be quite okay. And then I really don't know from there. I sort of said it a bit. I'm really keen to do a track 10K and just like run a really, really quick 10, and try and improve my PB there. But look, we'll just sort of see what happens and I'll go with the flow. I know that's a bit of a cliche.
Yeah, would that be Zatopek, do you think? 10K end of year, you'd go for
Yeah, potentially. It's never Zatopek's never quite that quick. It's always a little bit tactical, and I mean, I had an absolute shocker at Zatopek last year. That was a real case of me overcooking it because I was too eager for an event, and I was massively in the bin. And in hindsight, it was probably a big ask for me to get on the start line. But yeah, so I'll run Zatopek just because I'm keen to make amends for that. But in terms of like finding a really, really quick one, like if something pops up overseas, I might very quickly duck away for that. But if not, then I'll just keep doing the road stuff here in Australia. I'm quite happy doing that.
So this 5 weeks to Gold Coast. So after Lonnie, like, did you have a few days off then into jogging in? And where does that like threshold or the faster work come into play? Is it going to be the week coming now?
Yeah, we'll see. So again, like I've just got this tendon that's niggling away, and it felt okay this morning. But having the slight physio background, like with tendons, we sort of pay attention to like the 24-hour rule. So I'll load it up today and then see how it feels tomorrow. And as long as it's progressing and I'm able to run comfortably, then I'll keep pushing things along. But like I sort of said, like it's that balance of building layers of fitness. So if I do a session next week, that means I can't do my mileage, then I'm okay with giving a bit of a miss. But I'm also not going to pump my mileage over the next few days and then miss the session. So I'll probably start with that threshold stuff next week, whether it's Tuesday or Friday. We'll play it by ear.
And any idea of who's in that race, the half at Gold Coast coming up?
No, I have to admit, I'm terrible with these sort of things. I didn't know who was running Launceston half till a couple of days beforehand. We'll find out with Gold Coast probably when I'm standing on the start line. But I imagine it. I think it's our national champs for the half. I could be wrong there. So I imagine it'll draw a few people, and potentially we always get some New Zealanders across for that as well, so that'll be exciting. Just to have a big field again.
Yeah, I thought the half marathon chance was Sunny Coast, and then I was thinking, hang on, maybe it's Launceston after the weekend, and now you're saying it's possibly Gold Coast. It's funny that a podcaster and an elite runner can't work that out, but.
Well, if I could pitch something, because I was trying to ex my girlfriend's not a runner, and she was really quite confused about how the road national champs work, because our City to Bay fun run in Adelaide last year was the road national champs,
Yeah,
and
the
she was
12K, yeah.
the 12K, and she was gobsmacked that a one-off event could be a national champs on the road. She was thinking that it's some sort of series where you target different races. So if anyone from Athletics Australia is listening to this, I'd love to pitch the idea that Launceston, Gold Coast, and maybe Sunny Coast or
Yes,
Melbourne
love that.
becomes like a series where you score points, and
Yes.
that way that the best half marathoner is awarded to longevity as
And you've
well
got to be
as.
there. It's going to get the athletes there, isn't it?
Exactly right.
Like that. Well, mate, thanks so much for coming on. We'll wrap it up there. It's almost been an hour, so these things go very
Holy
quickly.
moly.
But I do urge the listeners to have a watch of that YouTube footage of Launceston the other week. And I put it up on my story, so it'll be there for maybe another 12 hours. Otherwise, just YouTube it because, yeah, it just got me so pumped up. I'm in the half marathon myself at Gold Coast coming up and just watching that footage. And just the battle between you three at the front was so good to watch. And hopefully, can get some listeners excited too coming up to the big race season. So I appreciate your time, Isaac. And thank you again.
No, not a problem, Ollie. Thank you so much for having me.
Did you know the local legends in running do online coaching? If you're looking for a little bit more guidance and coaching this year for 2025, there's heaps of events coming up. Jump on Instagram, follow the links. Cheers, and thank you for listening.